Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Yes, coming up, DeSean Jackson will be here. We'll ask him about Fitzmagic in Tampa.
Plus, I'll tell you why I'm not freaking out about Antonio Brown's latest stunt. But we start every day with the Whitlock. So what you got, big dog?
Oh, I got Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll killed Russell Wilson, the MVP candidate, the all-time great quarterback, the heir to Tom Brady's throne. That Russell Wilson is dead.
He did.
Cause of death, malnutrition, and neglect. What we're left with is the ghost of Russell Wilson, a hologram that can occasionally fool you into believing it's the old Super Bowl-winning Russell Wilson.
Wow.
The Bears weren't afraid of no ghost on Monday night. Khalil Mack and the Bears sacked him 6 times and intercepted him once. Took the interception to the house for the game-deciding touchdown late in the 4th quarter. The ghost had his moments. He dropped a dime into the back of the corner of the end zone that Tyler Lockett ran under. The throw and catch cut the Chicago lead to 7 points with 10 minutes to play. For a minute, you thought the ghost was going to perform a magic trick and rescue the Seahawks. Didn't happen. The magic man is dead. His play has been slipping for a couple of years. His completion percentage has dropped. His interceptions risen ever since he peaked in 2015 at 34 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. So far, through 2 games this year, the ghost is completing a career low 59% of his passes. He has 5 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. His passer rating is a career worst 89.3. He's inefficient on third down. He ranks 25th in third down passing. Those are the stats. What's worse is the eye test. Wilson looks lost in the pocket. Years of playing on Pete Carroll's defense-dominated teams has eroded Wilson's decision-making. He suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder because Carroll and the Seahawks never gave him an elite offensive line. Wilson has bad habits he can't shake. He scrambles backwards, does pirouettes when the line leaks. He got away with it early in his career because the Legion of Boom could cover any offensive mishaps, and Marshawn Lynch gave the offense a running game even when the holes weren't there. Now, at age 30, and at a critical season in terms of contract extension, Wilson can't consistently play the game from the pocket. He doesn't have the protection or the know-how. He's never been properly developed by Pete Carroll and the Seahawks. He's a talented adult who wasn't nourished properly as a child. The damage is done. Pete Carroll is the perfect parent for a young defensive star. He brought greatness in Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Michael Bennett, Bobby Wagner. Pete fed those guys vegetables. He fed his quarterback junk food, and he still is. Brian Schottenheimer isn't the right offensive coordinator for Russell Wilson. Nothing about Schottenheimer's resume screamed he could build a dynamic offense. He's been a mediocre or worse everywhere he's worked as an OC. In the 4th quarter of last night's game, Schottenheimer kept forcing Seattle's anemic running game. There was never any creativity, pace, or rhythm to Seattle's passing game. In Seattle, there's nothing left to do but point fingers. Last week, Pete got things rolling by publicly questioning Wilson's performance.
It always goes back to the QB. Everybody's going to focus on that. Russ needed to do better than he did yesterday, but we need to help him a lot.
All that's fair. Seattle defenders have complained for years that Pete coddled Wilson. But did Carroll really coddle Russell Wilson? I don't think so. He might have avoided airing public and private criticism, but making Wilson play behind that offensive line and play with a group of average receivers isn't preferential treatment. It's quarterback neglect that I believe has cost Wilson a chance to live up to his full potential. The great Russell Wilson is dead. I don't even think a new coach will bring him back to life. Celis?
Yes, sir.
That's my eulogy.
Woo, you said a lot, Pastor Whitlock, brother.
That is my eulogy.
Yeah, you said a lot of strong points. I got to agree with a lot of what you said, the meat of it. But let's talk about the sides. Let's talk about the fact that you're talking about him as a ghost. The best is behind him when the best was last year when the guy led the NFL in passing touchdowns. Like, his last record body of season work was the best in the NFL with his arm. You talk about the fact that he didn't have a Doug Baldwin in the game, too, and he looks like – He's playing a video game instead of just sitting in the pocket, staying on rhythm, staying in the system, and on schedule. I can understand that. When you don't have your best receiver, when you're already limited in your receiving core, you have a porous offensive line. I think Russell Wilson has always tried to do more with less around him, and that's been to his benefit. I just don't understand right now, all of a sudden, why are you sounding the alarm that it's over when this has been his mental makeup and his game since he got into the league?
Because, Marcellus, as a journalist,
okay,
and this is how I've made my living as a journalist,
yes,
I try to be ahead of the conversation. I try to tell viewers, listeners, readers what they're – before they know it, I'm trying to tell them, here's what's about to happen.
The and forecast.
I try. Yes.
So you're a weatherman.
No. Weathermen are only – they only hit about 50%.
Okay.
Seriously, on this, I feel really confident that – you had to properly develop any quarterback. If you go look at Tom Brady early in his career and the weapons he had and the pieces he had around him, the offensive line, and then later in his career when he's a master of the craft, he can do more with less.
Mm-hmm.
Forcing Russell Wilson through the first 5, 6, 7 years of his career to always do more with less has created some habits that I just don't think he can shake. His instincts when he sees pressure is to go backwards,
true,
pirouette, and do it. They're never gonna get him out of that. He now, I think, is starting to telegraph some of his passes. I think Russell Wilson's had a chance to be awesome and great and an all-time great quarterback. I just think Pete Carroll has ruined it through neglect and malnutrition.
Look, the construction of this roster was doomed once Russell Wilson hit his expiring rookie deal and we knew that he had to get quarterback money because he's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time for his first 98 games. To give you some numbers, fourth all-time in win-loss percentage. Oh, fourth all-time in completion percentage, second all-time in passer rating, all-time. Not just who's playing right now, forever of the game, this guy has put up numbers. What happened is, once he got his quarterback money, they looked at the other side of the ball where you said that they feed all those stars, the good meals, the Cam Chancellors and Earl Thomas, all those guys. Any NFL team in a hard cap system, we all know, you can't pay everybody. So either you have to go all in, Los Angeles Rams 2018. If not, you're going to be faced with this fate. And let me tell you one thing, a forecast. Many teams are going to face this same fate for paying those same stars.
Okay, but I'm glad you went to the Los Angeles Rams.
Okay.
Look at what they're doing for Jared Goff,
mm-hmm,
Todd Gurley,
yes,
Brandon Cooks, Andrew Whitworth, the right offensive tackle. They've put pieces around their quarterback while not neglecting their defense. And again, as we talked about last week, my belief is when you have a Stan Kroenke as your owner or a Paul Allen, the mm-hmm richest guy in the NFL,
yes, yeah,
you can afford to give out those signing bonuses and the cash up front to make sure that you develop a Jared Goff. And trust me, when Jared Goff develops, the Rams are going to pay him when it's time for him to get paid. And they'll still have Todd Gurley. They'll still have the offensive line and the pieces around him. Seattle, Paul Allen and these guys got away with the Legion of Boom and the defense carrying everything. Marshawn Lynch correcting problems on the offensive line. And Russell Wilson, I believe, is going to be the guy that pays the ultimate price for that because Pete Carroll's already, winds in the air, this ain't going well. Let me start blaming Russell Wilson because that, 67, he's won Super Bowls, he's won national championships, but they don't like taking blame.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I think this team was constructed the way you're supposed to construct a team with a young quarterback. Remember, Matt Flynn's there, he had the money, and Russell Wilson's drafted and all of a sudden beats him out in his first training camp and becomes a starter. Amazing. So not the death of a Russell Wilson, but the birth of Russell Wilson came from Pete Carroll. He gave him an opportunity. From there, with a young quarterback on the franchise, Pittsburgh Steelers, New England Patriots, defense first, running game. They had Marshawn Lynch. They had a Legion of Boom. But then what happens is if we have to pay that quarterback because he's an all-time great, at least by the numbers, guess what happens? Everything else suffers. Look at Tom Brady and what started to suffer with him. The defense, all of a sudden, offensive line, where's my running back? No name receivers.
Tom Brady's 40, 41 years old. When he was 30, he had the pieces around him. The point that I do like you made there that really that I wasn't prepared for, they kind of fell into Russell Wilson. Jared Goff was drafted to be the guy.
Yes, exactly.
And so they could stick with their original game plan. They had Matt Flynn in Seattle get Russell Wilson third or fourth round or whatever. He blows up into this great quarterback.
Right.
So they haven't adjusted as well because they weren't planning on making the adjustment. So it's a good point, but I still, at the end of the day, I worry that Russell Wilson's taken such a beating early in his career, has had to improvise his entire career. Ever asking this guy to just be that disciplined guy in the pocket, I think is an impossibility.
Look, anytime you stay off script, anytime you have to design it in the dirt and then you have to scrap that mid-play, it's going to be to your detriment sooner or later. I just think it's premature saying this right now.
All right. Stick around. Later in the show, we'll give you our approval ratings for Russell Wilson. Here's where they were before last night's disaster, with both of us having him as an all-star. We'll see if he's still in that class. All right, welcome back. Jason Whitlock and Marcellus Wiley. It's time for some big stories. Let's start in Pittsburgh, where the Steelers drama just keeps growing, with Antonio Brown not showing up for Monday's meetings and film study a day after Pittsburgh's loss to the Chiefs. According to Brown's agent, Drew Rosenhaus, the receiver had a personal issue and alerted the team, though Mike Tomlin didn't give any indication of what happened when asked today if Brown was at work yesterday.
He was not. No, I'm looking forward to visiting with him today and discussing that and some other things. I'm not going to get into the details of why he wasn't here or whether he was excused and all of those things. I just assume leave those things in-house.
Does that part of it get frustrating for you when it's the same person over and over again?
I'm focused on real legitimate things, okay? Seriously. We gave up a few big plays. We're playing a team that's big play capable. You know, we haven't won a game yet. You know, those are the real things, you know.
Antonio Brown being at practice after a loss or being at the facility, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
He's one of your highest paid players. He's one of your most important players. Marcellus, there's one house that keeps having drama. There's, you know, the police are always, hey, could you turn the noise down?
Right.
Hey, you know, there were kids partying here last weekend.
Right.
Windows got knocked out. There's one house where there keeps being drama, and there's one parent at the house. And at some point, you got to look at Mike Tom and say, damn, man, your house is Animal House.
Look at you. I mean, I can't go there, man. I have to defend Mike Tomlin right now. I don't think this is drama. I think you chose the wrong genre. Look, this is a story, obviously. These stories occur across the entire NFL landscape, but this is not a drama. This is a comedy. This is funny. This is funny because you know why? It is showing that right now the Pittsburgh Steelers are facing adversity. And they have faced adversity. Last year, they faced adversity. Last year, we heard the issues. Le'Veon Bell held out. Last year, we heard the same situation. And they won 13 games. So who's going to get the last laugh in this comedy is going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Tomlin has this team in control. Even though there are stories, Bill Belichick has his team under control. Even though there are stories, let's go back to my.
Who skipped practice Monday for the Patriots?
Nobody skipped practice.
Okay. All right.
They skipped Sunday's game, though, a lot of them, the way they play. Let's go there.
So did Pittsburgh's entire defense. Go ahead.
True. This is another classic example of us realizing through a 24/7 access insight into the world of sports that we think we have found something, discover something new. We have planted a flag and realized discovery. NFL players are disruptive. When in reality, back when I played, thank God they didn't have cameras. Because I'm going to tell you what you would have saw. You would have saw my teammate over here asleep. My teammate over here absent. My teammate over here missing the playoff game because he was drunk and hungover. My other teammate who got beat up didn't even show up to the practice of a playoff week. Not a story in the world because we were still number one defense in the NFL. You can function through this dysfunction. It's just now we're privy to knowing it, and we're blowing it out of proportion.
Okay, Marcellus.
True.
That number one defense you're talking about, are we talking about San Diego?
Nah, we're talking about Buffalo. I've been on a couple.
Okay, well, were y'all winning at the time?
Yeah, we were winning. Yeah. Playoffs.
Winning is a great deodorant.
Oh, it is. That's true.
It's the best deodorant. The Steelers are 0-1-1.
But do they stink? Forget the deodorant. You don't always stink if you don't wear deodorant. You don't need deodorant and you can still smell
fine. They tied the Browns.
Okay, the Browns are pretty good this year.
Patrick Mahomes is still throwing touchdown passes right now against their defense.
I give you that.
It's their the expectations in Pittsburgh every year are Super Bowl. And they're supposed to be right there with Belichick
and
the Patriots. No.
A 1-1 team and an 0-1-1 team are not right there together? Like, where are you with this? This is diva receivers have been around since the beginning of football. Jerry Rice had issues.
Was Odell Beckham at practice yesterday?
He finally showed up because he finally got paid. Yes, Odell Beckham was
Antonio
there.
Antonio Brown's been paid. I'm just saying, it's the Steelers. Day after day after day, it's something. It's not a tight ship right now.
It's not. But you know what? The best ship out there, the one that sails the farthest and sails the smoothest, is still going through rocky waters in New England. So what is your curve that you're grading this organization on? And receivers have been doing this since Jerry Rice, Michael Irvin. Do you want to continue all the way to Odell in your example?
Got it.
Yeah.
In terms of receipt, look, man, Michael Irvin and the Cowboys won a lot of Super Bowls, and Michael Irvin did a lot of things.
You're talking about Animal House. How about a White House?
I agree. White House, Black House, every crack house, all the houses, they had them
covered. He wore a mink in July in court.
Got them all covered.
In Texas.
They won Super Bowls.
They did.
Year after year after year. Three of them.
Three of
Again,
them.
Again, here recently, it's been a long time. They've been thirsty. Win a Super Bowl, and you're right. Win another one, and you're right. And it's like, hey, man, look the other way. Mike Tomlin's got it all under control. But the last few years, we've seen an undisciplined team on the field, the brawl damn near with the Cincinnati Bengals, Mike Tomlin tripping a receiver on a kickoff return, Joey Porter out on the field beefing with players. It's every they had to get rid of Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator. Ben didn't like him. Ben wants to retire. They don't know what to do with the national anthem. One guy goes out, the team stays in. It's, come on, man, this is Animal House.
And that, look, all of that sounds dysfunctional until you say, oh, but you're only one of eight coaches with a Super Bowl ring. Oh, you've been to two Super Bowls. All right, let's draw a line right here.
Yeah.
If you've won a Super Bowl, stand on this side, Animal House. And if you haven't, stand on that side and be in the suburbs, wherever you want to be. Nice, cozy, but you're still a loser. Tomlin's a winning coach, second most winningest coach in football behind Bill Belichick. Give him some props, bro.
All right, to a big story in New England.
You ain't giving no problem.
Where the Patriots traded a fifth-round pick to the Browns for Josh Gordon. Yeah, people are already wondering if the troubled receiver can fit into the Patriot way, and Tom Brady offered his thoughts on the move.
It's really up to the individual whether, you know, what kind of role they can carve out for themselves. So that's kind of how I feel, and it's I'm not making – you know, I hate to make projections and expectations. That's not fair. I've never met Josh personally, just like I have met some of the guys that have come in the last couple of weeks. So we'll see how it goes this week. Hopefully he can work hard, put the team first, and, you know, end up helping us in any role that he can find for himself on the team.
Gordon's history of substance abuse problems is well documented, with the receiver only playing in 11 games since 2014. And one former Patriot, Rob Ninkovich, isn't sure the move will work.
I don't think that he would be a great fit. You know, there's guys that fit and there's guys that don't. When the guys, you know, there's a certain personality that has to be considered when you play for the Patriots. And, you know, I question his love for the game if you've been suspended so many times to where, you know, or you hurt your hamstring doing a video for some type of endorsement when you've practiced all week. I mean, isn't that letting down your teammate? I think that there's a certain amount of pressure and stress that come with playing with the Patriots and expectations. You know, he's in a place really where if they win one game, you know,
celebration.
Yeah. So there's no playoff hopes. Like there's no win your division. There's no failure. If you don't win your division, you know, you're a failure. So I think that the Patriots here, I mean, it's definitely a stressful environment. It's not easy to play here.
Ninkovich said a couple of interesting things. One I disagree with. I do think Josh Gordon loves the game. I don't think there's any reason to question that.
Yes.
I think he has anxiety issues, and that's where I think Ninkovich is on more solid ground. He starts talking about he's going to be under a whole different kind of pressure in New England than he was in Cleveland. And I don't think that's going to help his anxiety issues. And so when I see a guy with multiple substance abuse problems, I always go to not that the guy is a terrible person. I go to the guy self-medicating. Mm. And the guy probably has some emotional, some maturity issues, some issues where being in reality is a strain for him. Mm-hmm. And I just think there's too much reality and too much pressure in New England. And I know that Belichick's had a lot of success with troubled guys. But this guy that hasn't done anything, you know, in years, I just, this is a tough fit for me.
Well, to me, this may be exactly what the doctor ordered. If you talk about getting into a culture, a climate where it's meaningful, like that one win is meaningful football, instead of going out there having 1,300 yards and you look up, zero wins, one win, whatever it may be. You're looking in a huddle and you put your hand inside that huddle and that's Tom Brady looking across at you. Not Johnny Manziel, you know, and it's a whole different animal when you're talking about his anxiety and what leads him to a place where he departs the game, which he does love. I think you put him into this place and give him leadership. You give him discipline, and it's going to go two ways. And I'm glad Tom Brady said it. I'm not here to forecast what is going to occur. I'm here to tell you that it can either go Randy Moss right or Chad Ochocinco wrong. It's just that simple, and it's based on his mental makeup and how much can he buy in to what they're giving him, because they're going to give him the proper platform and opportunities to go out there and ball.
I like your position in terms of let's put him into a structured environment.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get him out of Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
this cursed franchise that ownership, executives, and coaching staff can't get on the same page. There's chaos within that Cleveland culture, and you're dropping a chaotic kid into that. Let's see how he performs in the ideal culture and setting. And maybe you're right. Maybe putting him into, because I always believe young people, men, whether young or old, want structure and leadership.
Definitely, definitely.
That brings out the best in them. And so maybe the culture of accountability there will help a Josh Gordon. I'm just struggling because I don't think he's the same. People keep comparing him to Randy Moss, and I'm like, hey, man, let's go get the tapes of Randy Moss.
Next level.
They're not on the same planet.
I get it.
But I have seen LeGarrette Blount, who had problems in college, had, I think, some drug issues that wasn't got to there, did well in the New England situation and culture.
Yeah, I mean, what New England does best is extract your abilities, whatever that level may be. Like, Wes Welker became a household name, but people forget Wes Welker was, what, undrafted to San Diego, okay in Miami, and then gets to New England. He's a household name, leaves New England, not necessarily the same, obviously had his concussion issues. New England has found a formula where they can get the most out of you. And if Josh has his head on straight, and is really going to buy into the team first, he's going to get every chance to do this. That's what they do. Fred Taylor played for New England, and I remember we had a couple of candid conversations. I was like, is the offense really that complicated? He said, you have no idea. Like, the option routes, the opportunities that Tom Brady, because of the chemistry he has with his receivers, you can look at Tom Brady, and he makes household names out of basically anyone. For a reason, those repetitions, he's going to keep you in the film room. He's going to make sure you're dedicated to doing your route, or you're going to get that Tom finger that Bill O'Brien and others have suffered. So I think Josh Gordon's never been in Cleveland, and someone was able to grab him and say, hey, do better. We can be better, because no one was better than Josh Gordon. This is going to be interesting to see how it plays.
That's a hell of a point, too, in terms of he has – they really, really needed him in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
In New England, it'll be like, hey, man, either jump on board with what we're doing or we're going to move on without you. The train's going to move on. That'll be interesting how he handles that. All right, welcome back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Tony Gonzalez and former Pro Bowler D'Angelo Hall. All right, let's move to Canton, Ohio, where the Hall of Fame had to deal with a boycott this summer when Terrell Owens refused to show up for his induction ceremony. But it looks like there's about to be another one, and on a much larger scale, with a collection of Hall of Famers headed by running back Eric Dickerson sending a letter to the NFL threatening to boycott future induction ceremonies until they are offered health insurance and annual salaries, explaining, quote, it's well known that the NFL is celebrating its 100th anniversary in 2020. And while we are proud of our role in building this league, we don't believe 100 years of player exploitation is something to celebrate. As we approach this momentous date, we challenge the NFL to honor its past by helping retired players instead of exploiting their images for marketing purposes. All right, I had a long talk with Eric Dickerson this morning. Eric obviously comes on this show, great player. Yeah. I love all Hall of Fame football players. I think there's some good ideas in this, in what he's proposing and what these players are striving for. I don't have a problem with, but as I told Eric, I would have tried a different path than going immediately to, if we don't get this, we're going to boycott. I feel like they have the NFL over a barrel to some degree. The NFL's got so much bad PR that if they had gone a more direct route to Troy Vincent, to Roger Goodell, to Demoris Smith, and if they got rebuked then threatened to boycott. But they've come out really hard, and you know, some of the language in this letter to me is a little over the top. We're not going to celebrate 100 years of exploitation. You know, I'm sitting here with some guys that made a lot of coin and changed some family members' lives because of the NFL. Yeah. I just don't think it's 100 years of exploitation. That's a little over the top.
Yeah, at the core of what their issue is, I agree with it. In messaging, I found the same that you found from reading this, like the charge that came from it, giving it the historical context, but then bringing in words like challenging and exploitation. When you're talking about the NFL, we know that those boats have risen to a point where they had $17 billion in revenue. And the core of the league and the cream of the league has all benefited from it. So why not the cream of the crop, which is the Hall of Famers? So there needs to be a package that says we market this league universally. And we market you guys at a prime level because you are our best participants. Work that out. I'm not sure, full disclosure, did they try this behind closed doors?
Did not. Well, see, according to Eric, I asked directly, Eric said no.
This shouldn't be the first strike if you're trying to have a negotiation with someone.
Yeah, well, I like what they're trying to do.
Me too.
And I think it's right on and good for them. Being on the ballot this year, I think it would be a shame to go there and show up and there's nobody there. All my heroes. I want to see Shannon Sharp. But you know, it's just like, man, it had to be my year. So I do hope it gets figured out. And I think it should. First of all, they have points. I mean, the NFL's making a lot of money. From what I heard, they're asking for $4 million. Is that what it is to be?
Just health insurance. Yeah. That just covers all the players.
The Hall of Fame players.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame players. Hall of Fame players. And that's kind of where I kind of weigh in a little bit is, I absolutely agree with what they're trying to do. But it's so many layers to it, because the Hall of Famers, Tony Gonzalez, you're going to always be able to do things. Your name is going to always be able to shine. People are going to always know who you are. And for a lot of the Hall of Famers, that's what it is. They've made a lot of business opportunities and they've had a lot of doors open because they're Hall of Famers. It's those other guys. Mm-hmm. Like, what makes Tony Gonzalez playing 14, 15, 16, 17 years, his hits less than another guy who's a special teams player who doesn't have those doors open for him? You know what I mean? And so I did see Eric Dickerson kind of come back around and say, well, eventually we want to get all players this. But I think right now is the time to say, let's start with all players.
Yeah.
Let's not just start with the Hall of Famers. Yes, the Hall of Famers, they have the voice. They have that stage being at the Hall of Fame. So they can boycott, and that will be perceived as putting your foot on the table. But I just want to see everyone benefit from it, because those are the guys who really need it.
Yeah, I get it. Like, sometimes you just need a spokesman. You need spokesmen. You need the ones that's going to have the most powerful voice in your message. So I respect that. Kind of reeks, though, of the QB Club, if you guys remember back in the early 90s, where of the Players Association and prime players, quarterbacks, most marketable, they had a subcategory, a different category, where their endorsements went through, and they had different revenue streams that all the other players are sitting there saying, hey, like you said, my hits hurt just like your hits as well. But the craziest part about all this is, if it works, if they get what they want, it has to be in totality, because you have now changed your opponent. If you go at the NFL and say, us Hall of Famers, what, 280, 300 guys, the Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. Then there's the Hall of Gooders. And then there's the Hall of Ites. You know, like guys like me just sitting there like, what about us? Then the NFL is now not the opponent. It's all the other guys like us. And there are more of us than you guys. Yeah. And you just don't want it to implode.
I want to introduce a couple of more facts. They put out the letter. Mm-hmm. And Kurt Warner has now put out a statement. His name was attached to the letter. He's put out a statement that the letter went out without him ever reading it, without him signing off on it. He doesn't agree with the threat of a boycott. Jim Trotter of the NFL Network has alluded to, insinuated there are other guys whose names is on this list who didn't sign off on it. And so, again, we go back to the strategy here and was it put together? Because, listen, when this is why I agree to some degree with what they're talking about doing. And I argue with former teammates of mine in college and just guys all the time about, hey, man, when you are doing well, you damn sure better look back and help the people that helped you get there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so this is where I've been critical of NFL players and NFL leadership across the board, from the commissioner's office to D'Amore Smith. When the NFL, everybody keeps it, they made $15 billion. That's like me moving to some high-rise apartment on Wilshire Boulevard and then allowing my mother to sit in that same apartment we grew up in. Mm-hmm. God would look down on me like, are you crazy? And so when the NFL is making $15 billion and they look down and see Deacon Jones and a bunch of other guys struggling, and so I blame the players and ownership. Like, you've been blessed in this kind of way and you're not taking care of the people whose backs you're standing on. That's where I believe I wish that Eric, because I really like Eric and he's got a big pair. I wish he had reached out and maybe got some help and a better strategy here, because I think they're a little off base in ways that could damage this whole thing.
I don't know if he didn't. I mean, there's a long list of players here. And I'm not going to speak I'm not going to speak for Kurt Warner, but I've never heard someone say, I never authorized my signature. Like, dog, you signed it or you didn't sign it. You said yes or you didn't say yes. I've been in situations, not saying it's this situation, where you say, yeah, I'm in support of this. Yeah, I've come on air and said something. And then you get a step removed and somebody... where you work, what you do, what you say?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I never authorized my signature.
Well, I didn't know exactly what they were going to say, but the gist of the conversation was this.
I don't want to go all the way in on Kirk because he might have a full explanation, but I've been the one to retract something before when in full heart and full mindset, I was in support of that in that moment.
Now,
to me, this is something that should be addressed in the next CBA.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is something D'Amore Smith, the players, should take on. How do we take care of the guys who helped us get here in this spot?
It's a tough one, though. Look, I'm retired, 11 years, and I still have benefit packages that are layered. They get you to a certain threshold, 45. Yeah. You get your medical reimbursements. Yeah. You get to 50, 59. Then you get 65. This is going to sound harsh, but they're making strides to take care of us. But in reality, we have to do a better job of taking care of what we get. And the worst thing you could do is give somebody in their 20s everything that they want. Because what happens is you don't have that full appreciation. And now it looks like we're retroactively saying, correct my sins. And that's a tough one, because what is that dollar amount that corrects your sins?
A lot of this, though, I think in their mind, Marcellus, are guys that played before 1993.
Yeah, I was going to say that. A lot of this is the guys who were back in that day.
No free agency.
Yeah, no free agency. And even the way the packages have changed from since I came in the league in 2004.
So true.
Like, I got eligible for some benefits in, like, 7-8. And I'm like, wow, yeah, they retroactive, da-da-da-da. But I'm thinking, well, what if you were kind of even before that time? So those are the guys who really aren't benefiting from it. But that's a different conversation. Not all of those guys are Hall of Famers either.
Right.
And so I did hear Eric Dickerson say that he felt like they needed a seat at the table. But I don't know if that seat at the table needs to just be Hall of Famers or if that seat at the table needs to be former players, period. And it's a mixture of both.
D'Angelo, I think your point is right. Tony's about to experience this, just to put meat on the bones of what you're saying. When they put that gold jacket on you, they're also saying, you know what, now you can demand $25,000 for a speaking engagement.
Yep.
Now you can demand $20,000 to go to an autograph signing deal. Now you can, those Modelo commercials, well, they'll have to pay you more for because you're a Hall of Famer and you can wear that Hall of Fame ring. And so it's actually the Brian Coxes, the D'Angelo Halls, the Marcellus Wileys of the older generation that are the generation that doesn't get into the Hall of Fame. They have it a little worse. All right, welcome back to the show. Let's move to Philadelphia, where the Super Bowl champion Eagles announced that Carson Wentz will start this week against the Colts, his first action since injuring his knee back in December. Philly is 1-1 to start the year, but some people have wondered if they're rushing Wentz back after a couple of shaky starts out of Nick Foles. I think that Nick Foles has shown through the first 2 weeks of the season he wants no parts of being a starting quarterback. I don't think this is a desperate look. I think this is a look of necessity. Nick Foles doesn't want to be a starter. He likes being a backup. He wants to be a fire extinguisher that you pop open in an emergency. Other than that, he just wants to collect a check.
Yeah, in case of emergency, break glass. Yeah. Here comes Nick Foles. Look, when he signed back with his team, I knew that that was his mental, his mentality and the way he wanted to approach the season. Respect for that. I don't think they're rushing him back, though. If you look at Carson Wentz, this is a guy who created expectations that he would be back for week one. And he's been practicing for 6 weeks. They say he looks great in practice. Non-contact, because obviously you don't want to hurt your franchise quarterback. But if the expectations have been set medically for the entire offseason week one, and then you don't even show up to week three on the field, that's actually erring on the side of caution. So I don't see the rush job.
I don't see the rush job, but I do believe this. If Nick Foles were playing better, we wouldn't be seeing Carson Wentz this week.
You think?
I don't believe. If
Why?
Nick Foles were playing at a high level, they would be even more cautious with Carson Wentz. I know he thought, hey, I'm trying to be out here for week one, but I think their medical people had even thought it may be half the season before he's really ready. I think to your point and to our point, Nick Foles' mentality has been exposed. When he signed that, you win the Super Bowl MVP and go on that run, and you're satisfied being a backup, getting paid backup money, he's let everybody know, I don't really want the responsibility of being a day-to-day NFL player. And it's interesting, I heard you say you kind of respect that. I wonder if you were on the team or if you were still in the league, when you look across and be like, man, that's kind of crazy.
Well, you know, I respect it because he knows his role. He knows his experience, and he knows what he's capable of. And I don't even want to say it as it's a negative, with any connotation that it's negative. It may be a positive. Like, a guy's like, I've had to carry that water before, and it's like, in short spurts, I'm more than capable. But other than that, I know what this situation is. I feel the stability of this situation, and I know who our franchise quarterback is. But why rush back your franchise quarterback in this division, in this horrible division? They're not rushing. Look,
ego.
The Giants, ego.
Ego. Yeah, Doug Peterson has a big ego.
Not that big where you're going to compromise your future and you just won a Super Bowl. You got Dallas in there that can't score. You got the Giants. You got Redskins losing at home to Indy.
In Doug Peterson's mind, it's not true, but in his mind, he thinks there are people to think, man, you just got lucky. He thinks like he has to win a second one to shut up the Mike Lombardis and everybody for good.
Well, you don't win it in week three. So to your point, like, which way is it going to go? If his ego is speaking that loudly, he would wait. But I think he's waited enough. He's like, and athlete mindset, hey, man, can you further injure yourself? No. Are you mentally ready? Yes. What are we waiting on? Like, after a while, you just got to cut off the cuffs and go get it.
All right, let's move to Marcellus's favorite team, the L.A. Clippers.
What you laughing about?
Steve Ballmer just hired Sports Illustrated writer Lee Jenkins to the Clippers front office as the executive director of research and identity, whatever the hell that is.
Oh, don't do that.
Marcellus, will this unusual hire make your beloved Clippers relevant again? And why didn't Clipper Darryl get this job?
the tone of the show just changed. Relevant again? Clip City? Chip City? We're always relevant, man. Stop playing. Tremendous hire. Unconventional hire from the richest owner in sports. Can I say one thing we're best at?
Yeah.
We got that dough. Like, you talk about Steve Ballmer got $36 billion. He made $6 billion this year just in interest and investments.
And he can make bad hires like everybody else because he got so much money.
Man, this is a great hire. This is a great hire because let's talk about how internally it plays. Someone who writes exposés now can expose the personality of this team so that not only can we tell that to this L.A. market, but sell that to this L.A. market in a two-team market where we know they're going against the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James and the 16 championships. We get it. That is a daunting task. So why not control your messaging better? I'm on the Los Angeles Chargers Advisory Council with the ownership. You hear that?
Yeah, I heard that.
And one of the things that we're in tune with is the dynamics of this market and being in LA and how they export culture and how they really receive a sports team, not just in X's and O's and wins and losses, but in storytelling. This is an amazing hire. You just
No, listen. See, advisory board makes sense.
I'm listening.
For executive director of research and identity, that's some mealy mouth made up title to justify the hire. Clipper Darrell should have gotten this job. And to me, what it's a testament to, and no disrespect to Lee Jenkins or whatever, but it's about the collapse of the sports media industry and the media industry in general, that a guy with this kind of career as a sports writer has basically been forced, in my view, to take some job with the team rather than continue on as a high-profile, highly compensated journalist. Because, listen, if it wasn't that title, research and identity, if he got a real job, I'd applaud
him. He had a real job. You just don't like the title.
I don't like the title.
You said it's a bus stop title. I'm like, it ain't a bus stop title.
When is Clipper Darrell going to sit in that chair over there? When do we get Clipper Darrell on this show?
Yeah,
that's
let's
the only
do
question.
It. All right.
You got to book him. All right, welcome back to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. We're joined now by Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver DeSean Jackson. DeSean, welcome.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Great. DeSean, I want to start with Ryan Fitzpatrick's post-game outfit. He's wearing your shirt in the post-game interview. How did that come about?
Man, when I walked into the stadium, walked into the locker room, I had my sweatsuit on, got the jewels out, no shirt underneath. He was like, man, you look like you're going to go on fire today. I'm like, yeah, man, we got to get this one. He's like, when we win the game, I'm going to wear that in the press conference. So I get in the locker room after the game, and he had my jacket on. He's like, man, I don't know how to put this jewelry on. Put it on for him. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to mess around with him. So this is one of the things, just having fun, man.
Now, DeSean, not only did you give him your jacket, but you gave him a vote of confidence in saying that you think he should be the starter because he's playing so well. Your coach hasn't even gone on record to say the same thing. What motivated you to say it?
I mean, honestly, man, we just playing good right now. It's not my decision, but, you know, we're 2-0. We're playing some great football right now. And, you know, it's just what I felt at the time. It was kind of joking by saying the NBA Jam, like, you know, when you're on fire, you got to keep shooting that shot. But, you know, man, we're just having fun. We're playing at a high level right now, and everyone's rallying behind, you know, the way he's playing, the way everybody else is playing. We're all just, you know, having a lot of fun doing it.
Hey, look, when I look at a guy that you're comfortable enough with wearing your clothes, I got to start thinking, these guys got to be best friends. Only best friends do that. And how thick is your connection with Ryan Fitzpatrick? Some guys would think, hey, the outspoken DeSean Jackson tight with an Ivy League quarterback, that seems odd.
Yeah, nah, man. You know, Fitz's a good dude, man. He's played in this league a long time. You know, play for multiple teams, so, you know, he knows how to get it done. But, you know, we got a good relationship, man. You know, that doesn't disconnect the relationship I got with Jameis as well, too. So, you know, being professional athletes, man, we go out, we work so hard at doing what we do. Just got to go out and have fun. A lot of times, it's, you know, a lot of seriousness going on. And, you know, when you win it, man, that's what happens. Fun things comes out, and, you know, that's all it is. We've won two games that no one gave us 1% chance of winning. So we're going to have fun with doing that, and we're going to just keep playing at a high level.
So if what you said comes to life, how do you think Jameis is going to handle a demotion when he returns from suspension?
Honestly, man, that's further out of my decision, and I don't know how he's going to take it. But at the end of the day, You know, he'll come back. I think he'll be supportive of, you know, whatever situation is made, whatever decision is made. You know, we have two great quarterbacks. We feel like they could get the job done. So, I mean, whoever gets that call, you know, which once again, it's not my decision. I just got to go out and make plays and continue to make them at a high level. And, you know, I'll do my job. And, you know, whoever's playing quarterback, you know, that's their job to get that job done. So, you know, like I said, we'll have fun at doing it however we're doing it. But as long as we keep winning games and putting W's on our schedule, that's all that matters.
Deshaun, we heard some stories about Jameis texting his teammates after the game. Have you stayed in communication with Jameis? How do you feel like he's handled the suspension and sitting out and having to watch from home, basically?
It's definitely been tough. I'm sure sitting back and, you know, watching us go out and, you know, win games. But, you know, one thing I will say about him is probably humbled him and, you know, made him a lot mature, made him more of a man. But, you know, talked to him a couple of times. He's just been, you know, very supportive and, you know, just reaching out and just saying, you know, continue to ball out, keep doing your thing. And, you know, I feel for him. Anytime you got to, you know, be suspended or, you know, taken away from what you love to do and, you know, how you support your family, it's definitely going to be a tough task. So, you know, I feel for him. And like I say, still connect with him and still got a great relationship with him. Regardless of what we're doing right now and how we're playing, that still doesn't have anything to do with the relationship I have with him. So I know he'll come in and just be supportive of whatever it is he's asked to do.
Now, how excited are you to face the struggling Steelers on Monday? You saw what the Chiefs receivers were able to do against them.
Man, I'm excited, you know, about everything that's going on right now, man. Like I say, you know, first of all, the first two games, you know, put up some great numbers, did some great things, and we just want to continue to do it. We're going to do it one week at a time, and, you know, this week, Monday night, don't get no bigger than that. Got a huge stage to be presented on Monday night football. I grew up a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, you know, so family, a lot of family from Pittsburgh, so it's definitely going to be, you know, a special night for me, and, you know, hopefully we can keep stacking these duds, man. We just continue to go out and play how we're playing.
Now, how pumped are you to be in the GOAT conversation, tying Jerry Rice with 23 60-yard touchdowns on Sunday?
Man, it's a blessing, man. Been in this league 11 years now, man, so you know, just still trying to play at a high level, man. I know you know, the conversations probably haven't been up there with me being, you know, on the top of whatever it is, so with stats and the whole nine. So I'm just happy to go out, man, just continue to make plays. And, you know, I know what I'm capable of doing on that field and, you know, as a big play threat in this league for a long time and multiple years in. You know, so I just remember a lot of people doubting me since the first day I came into the NFL and just really not giving me credit for what I do. So I'm just going to keep doing my thing and keep playing at a high level and just keep proving everybody wrong. But it's definitely a blessing to be in that same conversation. And tying Jerry Rice's record, hopefully I'll go out there and break it Monday night.
Hey, Deshaun, you mentioned being a Steelers fan, and you mentioned about getting the credit for what you do. The guy that gets a lot of credit that has a game somewhat similar to yours is Antonio Brown. And I'm wondering, as you head into that matchup, is any of your motivations and thoughts about outshining Antonio Brown?
Not necessarily, man. AB obviously is, you know, one of the best receivers, you know, in the league right now. Arguably probably in history of the NFL. So, you know, what he's done over there with Ben Roethlisberger, obviously they've connected and did some crazy things. You know, so really just making the most out of the opportunities you get and present it to. So, you know, me, I'm a firm believer. Every time I get an opportunity to make a big player, have that ball in my hands, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I can't control when I'm going to get it or how it's going to get to me, but I can control when it's in my hands what I do with it. And that's all I've, you know, tried to, you know, base my career on. Every time I get an opportunity to make big plays, to help my team spark it up with energy or whatever it is, that's what I'm here to do. So I'm looking forward to Monday night.
Thank you, Deshaun.
Thank you, man.
Certainly converted some of us here. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are serious Super Bowl threats. Thank you. All right.
Wait a minute. I know he was doing an interview. You ain't got to go that far.
Brian Cox schooled me on this early in the year. He has Tampa Bay as a Super Bowl threat, and I'm starting to buy it. All right, we want to thank Deshaun. And for those of you who want more Deshaun in your life, check out his new podcast, Deshaun Jackson One-on-One. It's available on all streaming platforms, and a new episode drops every Thursday. All right, Marcellus, he did not run away from Ryan Fitzpatrick keeping that job in Tampa Bay.
No.
He said it on the NFL Network. He didn't run away from it here. He didn't fully wrap his arms around it, but he thinks clearly that if Ryan Fitzpatrick stays hot, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to wrestle this job from Jameis Winston. I don't believe it.
Yeah, it's interesting listening to him there. It wasn't with the exclamation point. It was with the period this time. Yeah. You know why? That Kurt Warner tap. Like, somebody in the organization said, hey, man, you are causing a firestorm right now by making a decision that, one, we don't have to make until next week. And let's see how Ryan plays in this game Monday night playing against Pittsburgh. And also, damage control. Like, your relationship with Jameis, you may think it's all love, and your brothers, I get all that. But everyone has feelings, and for you to take this side publicly, unnecessarily, is going to have some kind of impact on Jameis, and you should just be cognizant of that.
I'm just someone that thinks Jameis may not play week four. One, I think it's a short week of preparation.
Exactly.
And so, but I also just think by week six, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be the real Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Jameis Winston, whether we like him or not, and yes, he's had some problems, and I've criticized him for those problems going all the way back to Florida State. He's immature, all those things. But to me, he still has the most upside at that position in Tampa Bay, and legitimately, I think, has the upside to be a great elite quarterback in the NFL at some point this season. And I believe it's going to be by week five or six, Jameis Winston will be the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it's the right call for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Well, you're banking on the regression to the mean. Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick, will you please stand up? The real Ryan Fitzpatrick. And it's interesting, it may happen, and it may not, because he's played an entire year before and got paid because he had stellar play. Tell me this, how much of Jameis's upside is birth certificate, just simply date of birth? Because if you look at what Ryan is doing with the same pieces, like Deshaun last year, I see why Deshaun went out there after that game week two and said, you know what, this is our quarterback. Because Deshaun last year wasn't Deshaun of standard. And I think he's saying everyone felt that way, that same energy, whatever you may say about that. How much of it?
Well, for me, it's not about birth certificate. It's about, I have watched Jameis Winston since he was in college.
Okay.
I've seen the highs, and they're so high.
Oh, yeah.
That it's like, no, I want to feel that again. I want to get him there. And I think, again, you have to really get deep in the weeds and follow Jameis's narrative. You can't just follow the headlines. If you get deep in the weeds, I think the guy has matured since the Uber incident. And the Uber incident, it got played out in 2018, but it actually happened in 2016.
Exactly.
And I think if you really study what's gone on with Jameis Winston personality-wise, and I know he had to eat the W thing, it looked stupid or whatever, right, but if you really watch him play, the high is so high, and I think being a great football player is important to him, and I think he gives the Bucs the best chance to win a Super Bowl. And I think they potentially have a team that could be in the hunt for that.
Man, this is Wally Pipp all over again. It's happening right now. We can feel it.
All right, welcome back to the show. It's time for Darnell to try to teach me about social media. You know I hate social media. Darnell.
Yes, sir.
That shirt's a little tight, man.
It is tight.
It ain't
been
tight.
Been putting on some weight since graduation.
Some good weight. Some muscular weight. Something you don't know about.
You're right. It's behind
me. I don't know about, for sure. All right, Darnell, what you got in social media?
Yes, sir. We're going to start off with one of your favorite people, Whitlock, Meek Millie, who Meek set the internet on fire yesterday with news he's about to drop a song about one of your other favorite guys, Colin Kaepernick.
Ooh.
Twitter, hip-hop blogs, and social justice warriors all applied to the move. But are you excited for this new track?
No. No. This is something that's popular over social media. Oh, we're making an anthem about Colin Kaepernick. He's being lynched. And that's like, you're doing too much, man.
Yeah.
This dude is doing Nike commercials.
Mm.
Emmett Till wasn't doing Nike commercials.
Okay, that's right.
Guys that get lynched ain't doing Nike commercials. We need to stop it. And let, you know, Kaepernick is a brand that, you know, is popular over social media, and he did a gesture that is popular over social media. He's not being lynched.
Yeah, look, I don't want to minimize what Kaepernick has done because it's different ways up that mountain, and he chose his path. But the charge the charge terminology is what we talked about earlier with Eric Dickerson, and you know, it's lynching these words. Like, let's not go that far. But I'm a DJ, so until I hear the beat, I don't know what this song about. You know what I'm saying? I ain't gonna get me up here talking bad about it. But I'm interested to see how far they go with this, because those are two spokesmen of the community. You talking about people who have their community.
What community?
The community, Philadelphia. Go in Philadelphia and say, you can't even get the M out of Meek Mill if you said something bad about
Meek
him.
Meek Mill, I'll give you.
Oh, okay. Kaepernick, you won't give me?
Some Wisconsin suburb or, you know, wherever.
Hey, ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. And where he is right now,
just because you put an afro on don't mean you're from the community.
That doesn't matter. Nike doesn't think that.
I know. Nike, they promoting it. It's a market. Let's move on before I say something else really stupid. Darnell, what you got?
Yeah, let's move to UCLA, where the Chip Kelly era is off to a terrible 0-3 start. And the dad of quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson is fired up, tweeting that Kelly's years at Oregon were simply a fluke on his part, and ranting his coaching is so bad that it demands closed practices. A million-dollar coach who bears no responsibility, just random observations from a frustrated dad. Do y'all think this UCLA dad is the next LeVar Ball?
The next LeVar Ball, that's saying a mouthful, and I know LeVar is your guy.
That's my dog.
He ain't quite LeVar Ball. I don't even understand. The kids only played a couple, two or three games, and you already going off like this? Dad, calm down. Get some Twitter off in that household.
Yeah, real talk, man. Look, first of all, when LeVar Ball hit the scene, I said, that ain't nothing but my Uncle Benefield. And, I mean, everybody in their family got somebody LeVar Ball that doesn't have the camera and mic in front of them. That's my baby. He's the best. He going to go pro. I'm like, I'm 9 years old. Leave me alone. So the funny thing about an athlete as we go up the hill trying to make it is we don't have breaks. So it's beautiful when you hit that gas to go up it. But when you hit adversity or start coming down, or, ooh, it's not looking as pretty, Papa is telling you, we're not used to dealing with adversity. One, you setting the tone where your son has to deal with that. I do not want to go to practice with a coach that heard my daddy go off on social media that was global. That's not the scene that you should set, but hey, that's what he did.
Warren Central kid would never do this.
His never.
No, y'all never starting and playing at UCLA.
I'm there. That ain't happening.
They wish they could get David Bell.
Right.
They wish they could get David Bell. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's move to Josh Gordon, who's moved to New England, sent shockwaves through the league. But it's a good reminder to be careful what you put online. When the Browns announced they were going to part ways with Gordon this weekend, NFL Network writer Mark Sessler tweeted, if Josh Gordon lands with an AFC North team or the Patriots, I will drink bleach for 1,000 days. Any upside on making this promise?
No, this is stupid.
Oh, God, yeah.
This was
empty the can.
Yeah, Mark Sessler, good. You got on TV.
Yeah.
You got some Twitter fame.
Hip, hip.
It's a stick that worked.
Oh, my God. Like, that's bad. Like, I would drink bleach. We had like 15,000 likes. I'm like, sometimes I ain't gonna lie, in my quiet moments, I'm like, I need to do something really stupid and get some real love out there.
It's as bad as when, you know, Marcellus tweets out all the time, he's gonna give away books.
Right.
Something incredible. If Jason Whitlock loses 100 pounds tomorrow, I'm gonna give you a free book.
I never get thousands of likes. You ain't sending out one book.
Right. If Ball State win another game, free books, everybody, free books.
All right, Columbia.
What's next, Darnell?
Yes, let's move to Monday Night Football, where the Seahawks are getting roasted online after their ugly loss to the Bears last night. Barstool Sports even tweeted this picture of Pete Carroll wondering if USC would consider taking him back right now. The shine is starting to come off Pete. So you think that USC reunion could actually happen?
You know what? This is actually a great idea, and I got to give Barstool Sports a little applause. When I saw this, I chuckled, and then I thought, damn, this kind of makes sense.
It does. Because you're looking at the situation right now, and you're like, ooh, Clay Helton in hot water. Obviously, USC's not performing. But he left them high and dry. Do y'all remember those moments when everyone's like, we need answers? And Pete was like, well, I just signed a deal in Seattle. I can't talk about that. That's in the past. And I just don't know if he left the relationships in good enough places.
You know what USC fans remember? Last Saturday night, getting dragged all over that field.
Yeah.
They'll take Pete Carroll back.
I hear you.
Finally. Darnell, you got one more?
Yes, sir. Let's move to Von Miller, who slapped his teammate Shaquille Barrett during an interview Sunday. But Barrett got his revenge posting a video on Instagram of him slapping Miller with some baby powder. You guys like a good old-fashioned slap fest?
I think they need to be careful here. This could escalate. So, you know, in baseball, they put cakes in each other's face while they're doing interviews.
Right.
Somebody needs to pass some cakes around the Broncos locker room.
Yeah.
Let's take the hands out of it, because that could get a little bit, that could get dangerous.
Yeah, it could go real Steve Smith Sr. real fast. Like, hello, what just happened up here? We used to slap box all the time. Two things in the locker room. I see they're playing Connect Four as well. We used to slap box, crazy enough. We're already in a violent sport. We just want to let out some more violence. And we used to play ping pong all the time. But this is a kind of a mainstay in a lot of lockers. But like you said, be careful. You catch somebody on the wrong day.
Look, and slap boxing, big in high school football, wrestling, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's always that time when slap boxing goes spins off the rails, and they say, oh, they fighting for real.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's Triple G. Triple G Canelo out here right now.
Seen it a million times on the east side of Indianapolis. Yeah. I know you saw it too, Darnell.
21st, post roll, Midhoffer. You didn't see it a few times. You gotta be careful with the slap boxing, for real.
Nottingham Village ain't no joke. Ain't no punks out in Nottingham. Thank you, Darnell.
Thanks, bro.
All right, today we're looking at Russell Wilson, who struggled in last night's loss to the Bears, throwing a pick six in the fourth quarter that pretty much sealed the Seahawks' fate. Not surprisingly, my ratings for Russ has dropped dramatically, 10 full points. I'm taking him from a 74 down to a 64. Job performance is where I scored him the lowest. He went from a 21 to a 13, an 8-point drop in job performance. I just think he started out the season, these first 2 weeks, so bad, I have to move his job performance down 8 points. If somehow he recovers this season, he'll be right back up to an all-star level. But right now, with this kind of job performance, I just don't think, and again, he doesn't have the weapons, as we talked about earlier. I don't think Pete Carroll and them have done him any favors. But Russell Wilson just isn't individually playing that well as a quarterback. He's below average to me.
Woo! Doesn't have the weapons, no Doug Baldwin, offensive line is porous, no running game. And his job performance took that kind of hit. He led the NFL in passing touchdowns just last year. Like
last year, we're talking about.
Well, we talking about two games, or
September,
we talking about
16? Okay. We're talking about September 18th. Okay. What do I think of his job performance?
I want to blend those two games with the other 16 and see how that looks then. But I hear where you're coming from. For me, I look at it in totality. Job performance, it goes down, obviously. Whether you have the assets or not, we still have to perform how you work with those assets. So he goes down to 17, down 4 points. All-time great status takes a little slight hit, but the guy who historically is still one of the greats through 98 games. You talk about his authenticity. This is one of the few athletes that I'm around, and I actually hear people disrespect him to his face. He smiles. He doesn't care. He's bulletproof. But people call him corny. People call him cliche. And he's
that's authentic to me, though. He's corny and cliche.
Yeah, but it hasn't been well received. Because it
hasn't like, been well received. It's authentic.
Yeah, Sean McVay has a lot of cliches, and nobody clowns him. So it's a weird way of doing it. But here's where we should talk. Character. I got him high character. Because a lot of times we try to say, you know what, Russell Wilson's slipping. Oh, he's married to Sierra. Oh, he's not really putting in the same work. Oh, it's hard to make all pro on the red carpet. Not Russell Wilson had his best year, the year he met Sierra, and still is one of the great quarterbacks of this league despite having that so-called distraction. High character.
I have to ding him character-wise, and I kept it the same at 18. But my questions about his character go to his Golden Tate relationship. Remember, Golden Tate was accused of some things with his former wife. Russ didn't jump to his defense, didn't really like that. I don't have a problem with Russ's personality, but a lot of his teammates did, and he didn't have that bond with his teammates. We ding Aaron Rodgers for that. Why don't we ding Russell Wilson for that?
Hey, man, you're in the wrong place there. But Tony Romo went through the same thing. When you come from the bottom up and you become the franchise quarterback, everyone's jealous because you used to get donuts and pizza for us. Now you're telling us what to do. A little gel in there.
That's an interesting
point. Yeah, it's a real one. I saw that
doesn't change my score. Interesting point.